All right, from deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
I'm Gov Maharaj.
And welcome back to Defrag. So this week we want to talk about you. It's all about you. You're the big star on Channel 9. Can you talk about this video?
Yeah. We had Charles Torrey and Eric Meyer come to my office, and, you know, we just talked for an hour, you know, about
an hour and 4 minutes, and I watched every minute of it.
And your eyes didn't glaze over.
No, I was very interesting. It was very accessible. So yeah, it's interesting the amount of things, and people, they probably don't realize all the different things that happen at Microsoft to make sure that things run smoothly and work when you fire them up. Well, and that's your job, right?
It's truly amazing when you consider all of the different hardware that, you know, Windows supports. Basically, as a plug and play, you take your install disk, you install it, and it works.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah. But I mean, it was definitely harder on older hardware, you know. And as things evolve, we've just gotten better and better and better at it. And, you know, obviously with the help of our third party OEMs, our IHVs, our hardware manufacturers, you know, it's an ecosystem, right, that we've all built up. And to make sure that Windows works.
So when I'm watching this, is the thing that I'm thinking. I have a problem with my computer, and it just racks my brain. I'm like, how'd this happen? You're troubleshooting and looking things up. And that's a tough period of my life. But that's your whole day. That's like 18 hours a day, nonstop, problems.
Just problems, problem solving.
What does that do to a person?
Well, I mean, it makes you really analytical.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of have to be.
Yeah.
You kind of have to want to, you know, not give up on a problem.
Yeah.
You know, for every problem, there is a solution, usually. It's just, you know, how deep do you want to deep? And I like going down the rabbit hole.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it probably gets you to the point where there's nothing you can't... I mean, you've seen it all, obviously, by this point.
No. I would never say that I've seen it all.
I've seen a lot. I hope I didn't jinx you there.
I've seen a lot.
Yeah. But you know where to start, at least.
Usually. I mean, it's the scientific method, right? It's the process of elimination. You test a hypothesis, and you either, you know, prove or disprove it.
Yeah.
So, in a lot of ways, it's like binary searching.
Yeah.
It's like, well, let's see if any of these hit. Okay, well, if none of those hit, then it can't possibly be that problem. Let's go at it from a different angle.
Yeah. And so, let me ask you this. For the typical problem that you encounter, how often do you have to try to find an answer on some resource that's only available to Microsoft employees, as opposed to going out in the public domain and just doing a Bing search?
Well, it depends. You know, with an unreleased OS, it's usually always internal.
Yeah.
But oftentimes, it's kind of like figuring out what you're searching for.
Yeah.
A lot of information is out on the internet. You know, other people have come up with interesting solutions. Other people.
It's a numbers game.
It is truly a numbers game. Our support site is usually a good indicator of something that, you know, is known that we know about. So I tend to hit Microsoft related sources first. You know, if it's something third party related, I'll obviously hit their support sites first.
There's 90,000 of us, but there's a billion Windows users, so typically they've seen a lot more than we have as far as whatever might happen.
And unfortunately, a lot of problems that get hit aren't ever really documented on the internet. You know, if an enterprise hits it, for example, they're not going to be writing a KB article about it, because it only affects them in their environment. So
yeah, and there's weird things like if you're using sound card A and graphics card B, and the two just happen to have something, you might not write about that. You might determine that, but you might not write about that online. So
exactly,
probably a lot of things like that. Well, interesting. We'll link to this in the show notes, and you can go check this out. Very cool. All right, and so let's talk about our first issues today. And today we want to start out just by talking a little bit about SSDs. So I want to clear up some questions that people may or may not have about SSDs. The first of which, how do you know that you got, how do you know that you have Trim installed and it's actually running and working?
So,
and talk about what Trim is, first of all, for people who might not know.
So I believe we talked about this once before.
Yeah.
Trim is, you know, a set of technologies to help performance of deleting files on an SSD.
And ultimately, Trim will make your drive faster.
It'll make it faster. It'll reduce the wear and tear on your drive.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the big advantage of it. Unfortunately, there's no absolute way that is exposed in the OS to say that, yes, trim is, your
it's
SSD
present
is
and
taking
it's
advantage
running.
Of it.
Yeah.
Windows 7, by default, if it has an SSD, it'll already enable trim. Mm-hmm. There's a command that you can use, and I'll show it to you. It's called fsutil behavior query disable delete notify. If your OS supports it, you'll get back zero.
Yeah.
That does not actually mean that the SSD has or is accepting the trim commands, because all that says is that the OS will transmit the trim commands to the SSD.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to have the MSHAACI driver installed.
Yeah.
Many third-party drivers won't enable it.
Mm-hmm.
If you are running an SSD RAID system, most third-party RAID controllers and RAID drivers will not pass trim commands.
So if you're doing an SSD RAID, which if you are, write us, I would like to know what that's like. If you're doing an SSD RAID, you're not going to be able to use trim.
More than likely, no. So the RAID controller is going to handle all of that.
Yeah.
So it won't pass those trim commands down.
Okay.
The only real way is to take a benchmark of your drive and compare it to the manufacturer specs.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have a really good idea whether or not trim is enabled. Of course, you can do interesting things like get it on a kernel debugger
yeah.
or whatever, but then you're going down to a low level.
So will the RAID controller do the equivalent of trim? So, or will your SSDs be a little bit slower than they normally would?
The RAID controller will do the right thing, because
yeah.
remember, RAID is very complex of what it's doing depending on what kind of system you set up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're doing striping, if you're doing mirroring, it has to, there's a lot of overhead, but it's handled by the RAID controller itself.
Yeah, yeah, very cool. Okay, so next, what are some of the maintenance things that we should be doing on SSDs? There's no need to defrag, right? Is there any benefit to defragging an SSD?
Generally speaking, no. The biggest benefit, if you will, is defragmenting to get free space, more contiguous free space.
Yeah.
So if you're dealing with really large files, you'd want them, you know, all together if
yeah.
you're editing, that kind of stuff, games.
So generally, because it's random access to a solid-state drive, yep. you don't have to worry about that.
Exactly.
But if you were going to do video editing, for example, and you've got a, you know, 3-gig video.
Again, the performance benefit should be absolutely negligible, because there's no moving
yeah.
part, right?
Yeah, sure.
So it should be completely irrelevant.
Okay, but would it hurt if you defragged your solid-state drive?
If you do it too often, it's unnecessary read and write
yeah.
to your drive, so which is why, you know, by default, we just disable it.
Yeah, okay, cool. And check disk, anything that you should know about that? Is there...
Check disk will, you know, mark different sectors as bad if they are
yeah.
in fact bad.
Okay.
So, I mean, doing that, you know, too often, I don't think you can necessarily do it too often.
Sure.
But if you're, you know, getting some quirks on the system, if you have an older SSD, for example, or if you've been, you know, doing a lot of writes, a lot of erasing, a lot of file manipulation, you might want to run a check disk.
Yeah. Okay.
Generally speaking, you know, once the sector has been marked as bad, there is no recovery. It's a, you know, it's a physical defect.
Yeah.
You're not getting that space back.
Okay, next question, is there a better or faster connection type for solid-state drives rather than serial ATA? And is SATA even a bottleneck for a fast SSD?
So SATA right now, there are essentially two forms. There's the 3 gig per second SATA, and then there's the 6 gig per second SATA.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, that's about as fast as you're going to get. It's clearly faster than USB 3.
Mm-hmm.
Is that 5?
Of course, if you can get 6 gig, you may as well get it. It's not
exactly.
going to hurt anything.
Exactly. You're not really going to get any faster than that unless you want to purchase, say, a PCIe SATA controller, or not a SATA controller, but an embedded SATA device in a PCIe
yeah.
card.
So that'd be
really
like a hard drive in a PCIe card that
yep.
you can install in your system. And would that be your boot drive?
It can be your boot drive.
Okay.
I mean,
interesting.
There's nothing that would stop it.
Other than money.
Other than money.
Okay, cool. So that's solid-state drives in a nutshell. So next, is there a way in Windows to tag files and then search for those tags like baby pictures, financial docs, important things? I know you can do this for pictures, but what about other types of documents?
So most of the time you can do it for definitely Office docs. You can, I believe, do it for PDFs. Text files you can't do, but generally speaking, those are full text indexed anyways. So you can just search for text within that file.
Yeah, so you can't set up tags for like a just a text file.
Right.
But you can for a lot of other files like JPEGs. And for a text file, you could just use like a, you know, some weird word that you never used before. And because they're indexed by the search system, you could search for that word.
Absolutely.
And if it's at the bottom of that text document, you're going to be able to find that pretty easily anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one little thing that you could try. I wouldn't use a common word because that's not going to help too
much. Right. Don't search for the...
Yeah. And where do you where would you do this for a document?
So I downloaded a picture.
This, by the way, this wasn't our first choice for picture, but
I thought it was kind of cute, actually.
Yeah, it is cute. It wasn't our first choice, but this is what we're going with.
This is what we're going with. This is the Pink Panther. I don't know if anybody remembers the Pink Panther cartoons. I loved the Pink Panther cartoons as a kid. You notice its title is Disney Cartoons Latest Collection Picks 2010.
Yeah.
Those are completely irrelevant words for me.
Yes.
So, what most people have, you know, is this bottom bar when you click on a file.
Yeah.
You have this tags field. You actually have other fields as well that are available to you. I put in, you know, this particular tag called Pink Panther.
Yeah. You can put cartoons.
You can put whatever
panthers,
you like.
Animals, whatever tags you need to find this.
And then you can just go to the search and type in Pink Panther.
Pink. Yeah. There
Pink.
It is.
And
fast.
And it shows right up.
Yeah, and so you can also, if you need to, you can, like if you have multiple pictures, you can select a bunch of them, right-click properties, and then set a tag in there, and then you don't have to do each individual picture if you've got a whole bunch of baby pictures or something like that.
Absolutely. Windows, if you're talking about pictures in particular, Windows Live Photo Gallery has a feature in there that'll say, you know, these are people that I recognize, and you can, like, do all sorts of stuff, like tagging people by their face. And then it'll automatically go through and tag all those pictures that it can detect with that face in it.
Yeah.
I don't quite know the technology behind it. It's some heuristic, so I doubt it's 100%.
Mm-hmm.
But it's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I've seen other image library software do that as well. I believe Picasa does that. Adobe, was it Lightroom?
Yeah.
Whatever their image library software.
And for like an office document, like a PowerPoint deck, same thing.
Just click on
it and tags down below, right click, properties.
Yep.
All right. So next question. This one, internal Microsoft employee, in the last week or so, my computer display has stopped waking up from sleep. The PC itself is fine. I can hear it playing the happy unlock sound when I type in my password in, the mouse and keyboard light up, etc. But the display doesn't wake up. This is a relatively recent change, so I'm wondering if something from Windows update caused it to stop working. I already verified the drivers, and since it's an older video card, ATI X1950, I'm running their latest from last year. Any suggestions for how to track down the problem?
I would check to see if this is one of those desktop systems that are multimon capable.
Yes.
Some of the ones that we get here at work have... pigtails attached to it that have it's like a breakout cable that, with two different monitors that you can attach.
Yeah,
I've seen occasionally where it's the other monitor that gets turned on.
Yeah,
so the other one doesn't get detected.
Yeah, I've noticed this too. You know, I'll use an ATI card and I've got two outputs. So I'll run each to a different plasma or LCD at my house, and sometimes, not very often, but every once in a while, it goes to the one that's off.
Right,
and so I'm sitting there looking at the on monitor that's blank, going. Mm-hmm. Where's my display? And when I'm hitting things, I'm hearing dings and stuff like that. So usually I just turn on the other monitor. It's like, oh, there it is. And you do a monitor swap and you're back in business.
Right.
So that'd be good. And the other thing I would do, too, is try turning the monitor off and back on, the one you're expecting for it to use, and or both of them even. And that might trigger it, too. It might detect the signal and then work.
And if that doesn't work,
it could be a bad monitor.
Unplug.
Yeah.
You know. Physically unplug the monitor from the computer and then plug it back in again and see if it'll detect it.
And try booting just with one monitor and see how that works for a while. All right. Very cool. So next up. Can you make a copy of the C drive in Windows 7 to a backup drive while the OS is running? I'd like to mirror that drive with another internal drive occasionally. And if the main drive fails, I could just use a second drive. Not the best thing to do.
Not the best thing to do. And in fact, you can't do it in a reliable sense.
It's not going to work.
It is not going to work. We have certain protections in the OS that ties the actual operating system to a particular physical disk.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is for kind of everybody's protection, right? You don't mm-hmm. necessarily want someone to come in and, you know, grab your drive, clone it, and then walk away with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, have access to everything.
Yeah.
But we actually have the built-in facility for a complete PC backup.
Yeah, and you could use, you know, a Windows Home Server.
Yep.
You could, you should probably, RAID would probably be the best way to do this. Use a redundant RAID.
RAID would be great if you're thinking about performance and live redundancy, mm-hmm. you know. It, of course, doesn't help it if you delete a file
yeah.
and then a week later remember, oh, crap, I need
yeah.
that file.
Yeah, you know, you'd be better off with a Windows Home Server.
You'd be better off with an actual backup.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
And you can do things that'll simplify your backup, like keep all of your critical data in a particular folder, so it makes it really simple to backup.
Yeah.
But yeah, our built-in backup will do it. You can't do, you know, I've seen some interesting scenarios where you create a mirrored RAID system mm-hmm. and then you break the mirror set.
Yeah.
And you think that I've got a perfect backup of the other drive. Well, you'll actually notice that you won't be able to boot from that drive.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't work that way.
Ouch. So I kind of use a system like this at home. So maybe this will help the person that if they try this. What I do, and because I'm running a RAID 5 at home with four drives, I'm throwing the dice every single day.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time, that's just, you know, my main operating system, my applications and stuff like that. I only have one directory on that computer, on that drive, that is important stuff that I should have to back up.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep it labeled, and I know that I need to back this up, and I do it about once a week, back it up to two other drives, one's in a safe, one somewhere else. And so that's a good way to do it. And I just use, you know, the file sync utility.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, you know, just run on that one directory and then back it up to the drive, and then you can get it out of there. And the thing with that is, you know, if I lose one of these drives, and I will lose my whole system if I lose one of those drives. But really, if that's backed up, I might lose a day or two worth of things, and it's not that critical. And I can always reinstall the operating system. I can always reinstall the apps. That's not the thing that you need to worry about. It's the, you know, the intellectual property, the things that your pictures and stuff from your phone, things like that you've copied off onto this. So that might be one way that you want to look at it, too, is you can just back up one drive on your machine.
Absolutely.
So you can always get your apps and operating system back.
Yeah, the things that, you know, you tend not to remember to back up are, you know, if you're using DRM, anything mm-hmm. related to, you know, the Zune or iTunes or...
Yeah.
Or Real, you know, they all have sort of DRM licensing. So you'll want to make sure that you back up your user directory.
Yeah. And so a lot of those things, too, I'll keep those going to other external drives that mm-hmm. have their own backup, you know, things
it's,
that I'm doing.
It's certainly
doing as
easier
well.
To set it up to go somewhere else
yeah.
initially as opposed
yeah.
to having it sit on your system and then having to back it up.
Yeah. But if your system is a mess of all these things, you can use the Windows backup utility, too,
yep.
and that'll take care of you there. Cool. Okay. So next up, we have I have a thumb drive that I know has bad sectors. What's the best way to do a low-level format to fix that?
There's nothing that you can do to fix it.
Yeah.
Once they have bad sectors, they have bad sectors.
Yeah. And at what point do you say, I just need to throw this thing away?
So I've hit this particular problem before. If I've noticed that, hey, you know, the drive isn't necessarily being detected properly
mm-hmm.
all the time or across different machines, or if data is starting to be, you know, kind of flaky, corrupted
yeah.
pictures, corrupted stuff,
yeah.
I'll just say, you know what, it's just time to turf it.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of people, you know, are trying to save that media.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the best thing you can do is, of course, back it up.
It's hard to throw away media, especially if
Absolutely.
It's big.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people have 64 gig, 32 gig flash cards, right?
Yeah.
I once lost back in the day, it was a very expensive 16 gig
yeah.
flash card due to data corruption. I learned then that, hey, it's not necessarily so great to lose something that expensive, so I get smaller, cheaper cards, individual cards, so like 8 gig or 4 gig cards. Yes, I don't get as much on them, but it's easier to replicate, easier to back up, and if I lose one of them, it's not as big a hit financially.
Yeah, you don't feel so bad about throwing it away.
Exactly.
So what's the first thing, you think you've got some problems with the drive, what's the first thing you do? You do a check disk?
Check disk, yeah.
Okay. And so check disk says there's some errors on this. What's your next step?
Once I start seeing errors, I usually go into the mode of this is going to start failing right, left, and center.
Yeah.
So I just go into backup mode and just get all the data off.
And if it's just a couple of sectors and you did want to keep it, what would be your next step? Do you format it?
If you can format it, I just tend to leave it alone because check disk will keep everything as marked as bad. When you format it, it resets that information. So you're not doing yourself any good.
Yeah.
So just let check disk mark those sectors as bad. The OS won't try to write to them anymore.
Yeah.
But you just have to be very aware that once sectors start going, they tend
to go in
clusters.
It's not going to get any better.
Yeah, they don't get any better. They tend to go in clusters. So you're throwing the dice every time you use it.
Yeah. Okay. Excellent. So throw it away.
Get a new one.
Okay.
You'll be happier. You know, you get something faster anyways.
I have one on my keychain right now that's doing this. So I know how they feel. It's tough. But it's a keychain, so.
Yeah, and I mean, when you're walking around, do you really need more than 4 or 8 gig on you?
Yeah.
I mean, I carry an 8 gig because I keep the OS on it. I keep a recovery environment.
Nice. All right, next question. So I deleted 2 hidden files, ThumbsDB and Desktop INI. Now I have problems with my wallpaper and my thumbnails on my system. How can I fix this? Talk a little bit about, I mean, usually you'll see this if you have, you know, the right properties turned on in options. But what is the thumbs.db and desktop INI files? What do they do?
So the thumbs.db is literally there as a caching mechanism to help speed up displaying of pictures.
Yeah.
So when you have pictures, it will, you know, it'll
so the first time you look at a directory of pictures, you'll see that it just comes in as icons and it starts filling in pictures.
It's not just pictures. It's also movie thumbnails.
Yeah,
It's basically anything where we can create a thumbnail of the image.
And it doesn't do anything if you're in details view, right?
It will still create the thumbnail.
Yeah.
But it won't show the thumbnail.
Yeah. Because a lot of times if I'm in where I can see thumbnails, it takes a while for it all to fill in. It seems like it's kind of slow.
It'll take longer,
But if I'm in details view, it seems, you know, everything's quick.
Mm-hmm.
And so as it fills these in, it's writing to the thumbs.db?
Yeah.
And what does the desktop INI do?
So the desktop INI is really just properties of the particular directory.
Yeah.
So, you know, going back to the one directory that I had here, by default, you don't see a desktop.ini.
Yeah.
You have to actually turn it on.
Parent mode. This is kind of like we have children mode. We have a parent mode so that they don't, what is this?
You show hidden files and particularly the protected system files.
Yeah.
And that'll show the desktop INI.
Okay.
You're seeing 2 desktop INI here because I'm looking at a pictures library, which includes 2 different locations. We can talk about libraries later. It's basically a nice merged view of different folders.
And so a lot of times when you're in that view and you see a folder, a subfolder of the folder that you're currently in, and it's got some pictures, is that looking at that folder's ThumbsDB?
Yes.
Okay, so it's not making another one for the thumbnail of that folder.
Right.
Okay.
So, you know, pick a desktop.ini. And it basically just holds some properties of this directory.
Mm-hmm.
How you want the icon for this folder to show up.
So when you change from details view to large thumbnails, it keeps that in here.
It won't keep that particular information in here. It'll keep information like this. If you go to properties of the folder, oh, this is the library, so that won't help. Let's actually go to my pictures. You can go to this guy. Show it. Properties. No, it's not showing it. Download. You want the customize.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you can customize the folder to show different pre-canned views.
Yeah, and I've wondered this before. When you click optimize this folder for whatever drop-down you choose here, what is it actually doing? What's the difference between like videos and photos? Because both will be thumbnails.
Both will be thumbnails. It'll show different columns.
Okay. So like it'll show playtime, runtime for videos.
Exactly.
All right. Nice. And you, of course, you can set your folder pictures, which I like to do, so that the ones I use all the time stand out.
Yeah, I mean, if I went to the pictures and I, for some reason, wanted to make my downloads directory look like the Pink Panther. I'd have to find it. It did not want to reset the document, the downloads folder.
So is that because it's a downloads folder? Because of course you could set any other folder.
Yeah, so you have a choice.
Okay, or you can browse for something else if you want to.
Right.
But you can change the icon of that folder. Excellent. So back to this person's question. So they now say they had a problem with their wallpaper and their thumbnails in the system. But what happens if you delete ThumbsDB and the desktop INI?
ThumbsDB
should just rebuild it, right?
It should be recreated. The desktop.ini, when you delete it, it actually stays deleted.
Yeah.
So the easiest thing to do would just be copy it from another system.
Yeah.
From the same folder, wherever it is that they deleted it from.
And so if you've deleted one from a folder, will it still retain things like, you know, if you're certain views or whatever gets saved into there?
It should.
Okay, so you could just copy it from another one into the directory and you should be good.
Yeah.
And
from another machine of the same folder.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not just from any random directory.
Yes. Okay. And ThumbsDB should just start filling in the thumbnails again. I mean, it's kind of dynamic.
Yes.
Okay, and they should be good. Yep. And if you're not, you write us. We'll take care of you. All right, so next, and let's see. Sometimes Windows closes programs that it thinks has stopped responding. But I think it would come back if it had more time. What's behind this? How does Windows determine the application has stopped? And is there a way to lengthen that time?
So generally speaking, what that means is that the app is doing too much on its UI thread.
Mm-hmm.
So it's doing too much processing without actually handling UI events.
Probably why it kind of lightens up too. And
that's a visual indicator to say, you know, it's not drawing properly. So
yeah.
What we do is we take a snapshot of it and ghost it out. It's called ghosting.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of whiten the image and we lay that over top.
Yeah.
And we say, you know, the UI isn't, your app is not responding to UI events, so we're going to put something there that will respond to UI events.
Mm-hmm.
So if you notice, when you click on that multiple times, you get a dialog box that says, we've detected that this is not responding, would you like to restart?
Yeah.
Now, if you just leave it alone completely,
mm-hmm.
and the app starts responding again,
yeah.
it will unghost, and then the app will
And so it pops up, and it says, this application has stopped responding. And if you just back off, that dialogue will go away if the app comes back?
If you get that dialogue and you say, please wait,
yeah.
then yes. And then
yeah.
you just don't touch it, the app will still continue processing.
Mm-hmm.
But the moment that you know you start clicking, it's saying that you want to interact with it,
yeah.
and you can't, so it's trying to give you the choice of killing the process.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hard-coded time limit.
Yeah.
It's very difficult, you know, to say what is the right time limit, because based on research, it's about down to 5 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Apps should be processing UI events properly to make sure that they're responsive. Ultimately, the app should take fixes that will move that processing to a background thread.
Mm-hmm.
And then
so
they
probably the first thing that you should do in this instance is look for an update for that application.
Absolutely.
All right, and that might fix it right there.
Yeah.
But barring that, you can either please wait or hit escape on that message, and it'll just go back, and you can give it some more time. And of course, if you know you decide, well, it's time to trash this thing, you can just keep double-clicking on that,
mm-hmm.
the grayed-out background. It'll let you crash it.
Yep.
Cool. Okay. All right.
And that's actually not a bad thing to do, because it will send us information.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if we find that, hey, it's one of our products, or, you know, we can notify the third party if it's a really bad hitter.
Yeah.
You know, getting that information back is actually useful.
And do you look at that as like, we have a ton of these for this one app, let's try to get in touch with the company and see that they fix this? Or is it just, you know, I mean, how do you determine how that information is used?
Vendors themselves can sign up for mm-hmm. information, you know, if they want to be notified of this information.
Yeah.
We don't tend to notify unless it's really, really bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. If it's something that's affecting 90% of people.
Yeah.
Yeah, or if it's something that occurred, you know, we track based on our updates. Mm-hmm. If we start detecting failures after one of our updates come out, for example,
yeah,
then we say, whoa, what happened here?
Yeah.
You know, how do we get more information? We start digging down.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay, cool. All right, and now we've got your pick of the week. Let's talk about this.
So this is a, you know, kind of a hacking show.
It is.
We talk about hacking Windows. We talk about some of the nitty-gritty stuff. But I've come across this product, and I want to talk about some physical hacking.
Yeah, some hardware hacking.
Well, not quite hardware hacking, but this is like everyday hacking.
Yeah.
You know, this
yeah.
is getting in touch with your, you know, your hands-on hacker.
Mm-hmm.
So this is an interesting product. Some of you may have heard about it. It's called Sugru. Now, you know, full disclosure, I have nothing to do with them whatsoever. This is just a cool thing that I came across.
We're not getting paid.
We're not getting paid.
If they want to send us boxes of Sugru, we will accept that package.
What you do, what comes to Channel 9 is, is completely up to you. I've got nothing to do with it other than the fact that this is cool stuff. And
we
I really like it,
yeah. And it does get used on Channel 9. Clint Ruckus uses this stuff like crazy.
Yeah, well... So what it is a silicone putty, or it has a kind of a consistency of modeling clay that you get from the art supply store or whatever. You know, it's moldable.
So think modeling clay.
Think modeling clay, but it sets as a hard yet elastic silicone.
Yeah.
So you can, it sticks to itself, it sticks to metals, plastics.
And how hard? I mean, can it... like sometimes if you take a knob off something, there's a gnarled, like kind of rod in there.
Mm-hmm.
If you stuck it on that, does it have the strength to kind of turn that?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I've actually used it as a replacement for a screw.
Yeah.
So, you know, where the if you have a screw going into a piece of plastic
mm-hmm.
and the support for the screw itself is broken.
Yeah.
So you got nothing to screw into anymore.
Yeah.
Right? So you can mold the stuff around the screw and the existing plastic, and it now becomes the new support.
Yeah.
So this stuff works amazingly well.
There's a million things you can do with it.
Yeah, some of the stuff that people have done, you know, new mounts for GPS or lights on your bike, stress relief for headphone connections.
Yeah.
They
could have modeled that. It could be a little smoother on that.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
come on, sand it down with a Dremel at least.
Some of the stuff, though, it looks like really personal.
Yeah.
So it comes in a variety of colors. So here's an interesting one. I use tie-down straps a fair amount, and mm-hmm. the ones you get from the hardware store are the nice and cheap, but a lot of exposed metal.
Yeah.
Don't know why.
Yeah.
You'd think, you know, dip this thing in silicone and then it'd be good, but, you know, somebody said, hey, I'll just make my own.
And what's the dried consistency? Is it kind of tacky? Is it...
No, it's not tacky at all.
Like a smooth plastic? Does it have any give to it at all?
It does have give.
Okay.
Yeah, so, you know, if you have it...
So you could use it, like, for the bottom feed on your laptop or something like that.
Absolutely.
Those always come off, and then you've got plastic on desk.
Yep, you can, you know, create a rubber stamp. It kind of has the consistency of, like, a rubber eraser.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's kind of its consistency. It's stiff, but it has some give.
Yeah. Very cool. Yeah, so Clint Ruckus, I walked into his office once, and he had actually made a stand for the back of his monitor for his Kinect, so mm-hmm. he could test Kinect. And it looked like, you know, I was like, what was this? You know, what'd you do here? And so he told me about this, and it's pretty amazing stuff.
Yeah, I know a lot of people have problems with loose cables.
Yeah.
For example, you know...
Oh, the HDMI on our... Yeah.
Right.
No, I'm not a big fan of HDMI cables to begin with.
Use
locking connectors. Come on.
So that was a design oversight. Let's just call it a design oversight for HDMI cables.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
What you could do with Sugru is, you know, put a wrap it around the end of the connector.
Yeah.
Put, say, a zip tie through it.
Yeah.
And then zip tie it to whatever is close by on the monitor.
Yeah.
Or, you know, mold it to the monitor. So if you know that you're never taking out the cable.
Yeah, you could mold it around the cable with a nut, mm-hmm. mold something on the TV with a nut, and then use a screw. And
Absolutely.
They'd end up with a locking connector that should have been on HDMI to begin with.
Absolutely.
Very cool. Awesome. All right. Well, that's our show for this week. So if you want to get in touch with us, defragshow@microsoft.com. Send us a mail. Let us know what kind of problems you have. And I'll make sure Gove stays up all night long and figures that out for you. And you'll be on the show. All right. Thanks for watching.